So the fear of missing out, which creates, you know, a valuation bubble, it results in skeletons, you know, down the line, right? So therefore, you know, that's one of the reasons to be fearful of FOMO.
So hi everyone, super stoked to announce that today we have Vinayak Kamath on the podcast of Hearth Ventures. So Hearth Ventures is doing some absolutely phenomenal stuff through their VC arm, which invests in like crafts industry and circular economy and stuff like that. So Vinayak, let's start first with your engineering background. Like, so you have an engineering background and then you went to CEO and now you're VC. So what were some of those kind of lessons and mistakes you made or you learned along the way? And what could you impart as some advice for the audience today?
Okay, so I have an engineering degree. Thankfully, I never had to work as an engineer for a livelihood. Okay, I'll explain later if we have the time. Yeah, but very quickly, you know, immediately after engineering, I did an MBA and then worked in industry in operating roles for a fairly long time. And I actually stumbled into private investing, you know, in private equity, actually, you know, much before the VC stuff started. Thanks to a mentor of mine, you know, who gave me a very senior role, which is quite unusual. You know, most people start at the entry level. So I got a very senior lateral role of, you know, a very responsible role. So I fell into private investing and I fell in love with it, you know. So the journey to VC today started from a journey into private equity, you know, almost 2 decades ago, which was by accident. But your main question was, what is the lessons and mistakes? Yeah. And Rui, actually, I could do a full day of mistakes. You know, if you said, let's do a 24-hour podcast of mistakes, I could do a full day of mistakes. Yeah. But I guess that's not the point. Maybe, you know, so let's focus on lessons learned. Right. And I'll try to distill 2 or 3. It is no different, possibly, you know, from what some of the greats of investing in the past have through their life experience distilled, right? So the first source of any mistake in an investing journey is because of FOMO, fear of missing out. No? So when you're an investor, you know, as an investor, if you look at all the investing mistakes that you made in your life, most of them are, you know, stem from the fear of missing out, right? You talk yourself into thinking, oh, this is a great idea, or these are great founders, or this is a great founder plus idea, but, you know, I need to get in. And if you jump in from a position of fearing of missing out, you know, that's where most of the mistakes are made in an investing journey. The lesson from there is look at founders of exceptional caliber along with exceptional financial and intellectual integrity, one. You know. And two is, you know, all good stories, you know, sound like great ideas, you know. So if you're given, you know, if you first hear of the idea of Facebook, you know, it might sound fantastic. You first hear of the idea of Uber, it would sound fantastic to you. I take, you know, names in the common, you know, names that have gone on to become, you know, outstanding, you know, or otherwise companies, you know, from startups. So every idea, you know, when articulated well, sounds good, right? So the lesson is don't jump into, you know, every well-articulated idea because of the fear of missing out. Do your own diligence. Be patient, you know. Patience is a friend of an investor, you know. Fear of missing out and impatience is an enemy of a good investor. I'll just take a pause here to see if you have any other, you know, anything you want to ask more.
Yeah, so then following up on that, like, what was any, like, one FOMO moment you've had in your investment journey? Like, one moment where you're like, I wish I'd invested in this company, or like other people were investing and you also wanted to invest in that company. Like, what kind of moment, any kind of moment like that for you in your journey?
Oh yes, oh yes, not one but many, right? So there are two types of mistakes, you know, which basic statistics tell you, the error of commission and the error of omission, right? So I have made, I've made both, so the error of omission is, missing out on great ideas. You know, there are some venture funds who have, what is what they call the anti-portfolio. You know, Bessemer Venture Funds invented the anti-portfolio, which is all the great ideas that were shown to them, but they missed investing in, right? So there are one or two, I'd rather not name them now because they're still, transactions which have not yet reached public prominence, right? So I'd rather not name them now. But error of commission, yes. And I can, without naming a company, I can name something from about 12 years ago. It was founded by some well-educated founders. They were marquee investors in before me, right? It was a great idea which was going to revolutionize agri-tech. It was one of perhaps the earliest ideas in agri-tech before agri-tech funds were existing in India. But there was only a product. There were pilots, there were patents, but there was no revenue. You know, there was no proof that the market was willing to accept that product. So there was a serious flaw in the go-to-market conceptualization, right? And I made the mistake of investing a substantial amount of my personal money, at a pre-revenue stage. It would have been best to just wait out, get for them to go to the market, get a product market fit, and then commit money, right? But I just went by the pedigree of the founders, the pedigree of the institutions that they came from, the pedigree of the earlier investors. So that's one mistake that I made about 12 years ago. And in 2 years' time, the company shut down. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was extremely insightful to hear your lessons and mistakes that you made as an investor. So now let's talk more about your experience pivoting away from that in BITS Pilani. So you were a student, I think, at BITS Pilani. So
That's
what
right.
was that experience like? Like, I know, like, now, like, there's this, like, famous YouTuber who dropped out called Ishan Sharma. I think he went to BITS Pilani as well. So, like, what can you share about, like, your experience there? Like, how did you the time that you spend there transform your life or like shape it in some way?
Right. You know, so bits is something that it needs to be experienced. You can't easily convey. All my fellow BITS alumni will agree with that, So it was the nearest thing to a liberal arts college in the 80s when I went to study there, yeah. In the sense that along with your engineering, for example, I had an interest in music. So I had a course called Appreciation of Indian Music, where you were taught about the history of music, about various instruments, ragas, and you had to actually perform to get course credits. So you had the option of pursuing, what might lead you to a day job and other interests. As a mechanical engineer, I took up advertising and marketing, which was as one of my optional electives, because that was a field of interest. So it was the nearest thing to a liberal arts college in India that existed in those days. You could learn so much, in the classroom and so much outside the classroom, right? We had a lot of infrastructure, this you might not appreciate it today, but we had one of the biggest mainframe computers existing in the country in the 80s, which of course, your cell phone and mine have more computing power than what it did, but it was a big deal then. So, you know, so that environment, you could come out of that environment in one of two things, right? You could be a good engineer or an applied sciences person. Like many of my classmates, many of my predecessors, many of my successors, right? BITS Pilani has produced some great engineers, right? Or you could, might not have the aptitude for core, hardcore engineering. Like I realized I didn't. It was easy to get into engineering, but I realized that it laid the foundation for an all-round career, right? So business school was a cakewalk, because of the rigors and the environment of BITS Pilani, So it was the most important 4 years of my life, yes.
That's really great to hear how BITS Pilani was so transformative for you and for your life. So let's get back to the topic of FOMO. So, like, how do you create FOMO in a fundraise as a founder and then as a VC? Like, what could you share? Like, how hard was it to fundraise for your first inaugural fund of Hearth Ventures? And what exactly is the investment thesis of Hearth Ventures?
Okay, so there are three questions, which is, you wanted to talk more about FOMO in the VC ecosystem. Maybe I'll do that last. Your second question was about, how easy or hard it is for fundraise. That I'll answer second. So let me start with your third question, which is what is the investment thesis? Yeah. About 3 years back, with three founders at Hearth Ventures, we started with a hypothesis, which one of my co-founders proposed, was that India has so much of a rich craft and cultural heritage. Yeah. The global, handmade industry is anywhere from $350 billion to $1 trillion, depending on who you ask. Okay. And India has less than 2% of the market share in the global handmade, So the question was why, right? So we have, if you look at, what the government calls geographical indicators, we have nearly 200 GI tagged craft and art forms, from metalwork to pottery work to grass to weaving to apparel, hand looms, textiles. There are some 200 native, recognized geographical indicator art forms across the country, right? And some of these date back hundreds and thousands of years, yeah? So we have such a rich craft and cultural heritage. But why is it that we have only 2% of the global handmade marketplace, right? An adjunct thesis, which formed later in our journey, was, okay, so craft, handmade, and all that is one. Second is this whole thing of, when people look at sustainability, yeah, and if I've heard you talk to so many VC investors, right? So ESG, climate, sustainability, a lot of them, a lot of funds, not just in India, all over the world, are looking at climate and sustainability as a lens for investing. Yeah, and they'll talk of one of three things, right? They'll talk of mobility, which is EV, transportation, blah blah. Yeah, they'll talk of energy, right? So energy transition, green hydrogen. Renewable energies, solar, wind, for a decade and more, right? So mobility, energy, and third is waste management, yeah? But if you look at retail consumption, what you and I consume, okay, starting from the apparel that we wear, So for example, anecdotally, some 40,000 liters of water go into producing one pair of denim jeans, It's a huge environmental footprint, right? Starting from the cotton that is sewn through to the yarn making, through to the washing, right? And post-life. That's just water. The environmental footprint, if you aggregate all of that, so this is one anecdote, but if you aggregate all of the retail consumption footprint, what you and I consume, plastics, microplastics, packaging material, you know, the waste that we generate. So if you look at retail consumption as a horizontal, right? So we've spoken about mobility, energy, waste management as, you know, the verticals of climate lens that people look at. If you look at retail consumption as a horizontal, that contributes anywhere from 10 to 20% of the overall global climate impact. So we said, combine all this to say that creative, cultural, and circular economy startups, right? Creative and cultural, that is Indian native craft forms, and creating brands based on those craft forms, and other solutions based on those craft forms, and then sustainability and circularity in retail consumption, right? So that's where the circular comes from, right? So this is our investment thesis. We're looking at brands, technology solutions, enablers, you know, logistics providers, service providers, you know, the entire ecosystem within the creative, cultural, and circular economy startups. Right, that's our investment thesis. How hard is it to raise our fund? We are still in the process of raising our first fund. We've made investments because our story is not easy to tell, you know. If you look at, if you say climate, you know, you say, I'm investing with a climate lens, right? So there might be 30, 40, 50 funds who say, you know, we are investing with ESG slash climate slash sustainability, right? If that's their one word, you know, opening foot in the door, their story is easy to tell, right? Our story is harder, but it needs to get there. You know, it takes time, but those who get it, they get it, right? So our fundraise is more difficult because our story is harder to comprehend, right? Which is why we have a portfolio of companies. We started making investments over the last 2 years. Those companies have done well. And when people look at, you know, the performance of some of those, that's when they say, aha, okay, now we understand what you're trying to say, right? So our fundraising is not exactly a cakewalk because our story is not easy to tell and easy to sell, you know, right? So therefore, why is it not easy to sell? Okay, I'll come back to you with your answer to your first question, which is, in that VC or investor ecosystem, what is FOMO? Okay, so just as you have, you know, VCs investing in startups, you have LPs investing in VC funds, right? So the first, you know, FOMO that many LPs suffer from is, are they investing in the latest idea? You know, so are they investing in AI, deep tech, climate and sustainability today, right? If they are not, then there is a fear of missing out amongst the LPs who invest in funds. Right? So flip back, you know, 10, 15 years ago when, say, there were no agri-tech funds. So if you went with the story of, I'm going to create an agri-tech fund, their fundraising story, you know, was very difficult, you know, a decade back, 12 years back. Today, all the agri-tech funds have more than $1 billion, right? Maybe between 3 or 4 agri-tech funds that operate in the country, they have more than $1 billion AUM, you know. Agri-tech is commonplace today, you know. So the fear of missing out starts from the LPs. They want to invest in VC funds, which have, you know, the latest buzzwords. You know, when you have something like, you know, 200-300 VC funds, okay, and then you have some topped up deals, you know, so you have some deals which have gained prominence in the market. Funds will compete with each other to outdo in terms of, you know, investment term sheets, right? So in the heydays, you had funds who were, you know, outbidding each other. The best of deals got the best of valuations, you know, right? The downstream effect of all of that is that, you know, 2 or 3 years later, some of those, you know, unicorns are doing down rounds, right? So they might have raised the money at 10 billion, 20 billion valuation, you know, 3 years, 4 years back, right? Today, they're struggling to raise at maybe, you know, a fraction of that. So the fear of missing out, which creates, you know, a valuation bubble, it results in skeletons, down the line, right? So therefore, that's one of the reasons to be fearful of FOMO. I'll take a pause here, and if you have any follow up to what I just said, happy to take that.
No follow up as such. So yeah, it was an absolute honor and a pleasure to host you on the podcast today. And do share like how the audience can get in touch with you, how they can pitch to you, how they can learn about Earth Ventures, anything you want to promote. Like now's your stage.
I'm hoping that there is an investor audience that's listening. So we are available at hearth.ventures. That's our URL. You can follow us on LinkedIn. We have a LinkedIn page, Hearth Ventures. These are our main social handles. Otherwise, you can get in touch with me at vinayak@hearth.ventures.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights once again. And yeah, I know this was supposed to happen like a while back, and
so the
then
fear
I
of
postponed
missing out,
it. So
creates,
yeah, so
valuation
super glad
bubble,
that you
it
came on today and we had this chat.
Down the line.
Thanks for having me, Ruhi.
So therefore,
it was a pleasure speaking with you.
That's one of the reasons
thanks
to
for including me
be
in your
fearful of
podcast.
FOMO.